Chapter 4. Book on North Dormer. "See here," he said, "why ain't you at the library the days you're supposed to be there?" The question, breaking in on her mood of blissful abstraction, deprived her of speech, and she stared at him for a moment without answering. "Who says I ain't? There's been some complaints made, it appears. Miss Hatchard sent for me this morning." Charity's smoldering resentment broke into a blaze. "No. Orma Fry, and that toad of a Target girl and Ben Fry, like as not. He's going round with her. The low-down sneaks, I always knew they'd try to have me out. As if anybody ever came to the library, anyhow. Somebody did yesterday, and you weren't there." "Yesterday?" She laughed at her happy recollection. "Tea, what time wasn't I there yesterday, I'd like to know?" "Round about 4 o'clock." Charity was silent. As he had been so steeped in the dreamy remembrance of young Arnie's visit, that as he had forgotten having deserted her post, as soon as he had left the library. "Who came at 4 o'clock?" "Miss Hatchard did."
"Miss Hatchard?
Why, she ain't ever been near the place since she's been lame. She couldn't get up the steps if she tried. She can be helped up, I guess. She was yesterday, anyhow, by the young fellow that's staying with her. He found you there, I understand, earlier in the afternoon, and he went back and told Miss Hatchard the books were in bad shape and needed attending to. She got excited, and had herself wheeled straight round, and when she got there the place was locked. So she sent for me, and told me about that, and about the other complaints. She claims you've neglected things, and that she's going to get a trained librarian." Charity had not moved while he spoke. She stood with her head thrown back against the window frame, her arms hanging against her sides, and her hands so tightly clenched that she felt, without knowing what hurt her, the sharp edge of her nails against her palms. Of all Mr. Royal had said, as he had retained only the phrase, "He told Miss Hatchard the books were in bad shape." What did she care for the other charges against her? Malice or truth, she despised them as she despised her detractors. But that the stranger to whom as he had felt herself so mysteriously drawn should have betrayed her, that at the very moment, when as he had fled up the hillside, to think of him more deliciously he should have been hastening home, to denounce her shortcomings. She remembered how, in the darkness of her room, she had covered her face to press his imagined kiss closer, and her heart raged against him for the liberty he had not taken. "Well, I'll go," she said suddenly. "I'll go right off."
"Go where?"
She heard the startled note in Mr. Royal's voice. "Why, out of their old library. Straight out, and never set foot in it again. They needn't think I'm going to wait round, and let them say they've discharged me."
Charity
Royal, you listen," he began, getting heavily out of his chair, but she waved him aside, and walked out of the room. Upstairs she took the library key from the place, where she always hid it under her pincushion who said she wasn't careful, put on her hat, and swept down again, and out into the street. If Mr. Royal heard her go, he made no motion to detain her. His sudden rages probably made him understand the uselessness of reasoning with hers. She reached the brick temple, unlocked the door and entered into the glacial twilight. "I'm glad I'll never have to sit in this old vault again, when other folks are out in the sun," she said aloud as the familiar chill took her. She looked with abhorrence at the long dingy rows of books, the sheep-nosed Minerva on her black pedestal, and the mild-faced young man in a high stock whose effigy pined above her desk. She meant to take out of the drawer a roll of lace and the library register, and go straight to Miss Hatchard to announce her resignation. But suddenly a great desolation overcame her, and she sat down and laid her face against the desk. Her heart was ravaged by life's cruelest discovery. The first creature who had come toward her out of the wilderness had brought her anguish instead of joy. She did not cry, tears came hard to her, and the storms of her heart spent themselves inwardly. But as she sat there in her dumb woe, she felt her life to be too desolate, too ugly and intolerable.
What have I ever done to it, that it should hurt me so? She groaned, and pressed her fists against her lids, which were beginning to swell with weeping. I won't go there looking like a whore, she muttered, springing up and pushing back her hair, as if it stifled her. She opened the drawer, dragged out the register, and turned toward the door. As she did so it opened, and the young man from Miss Hatchard's came in whistling. Ivy, he stopped and lifted his hat with a shy smile. Beg your pardon, he said. Thought there was no one here. Charity stood before him, barring his way. Who can't come in? The library ain't open to the public Wednesdays. I know it's not, but my cousin gave me her key. Miss Hatchard's got no right to give her key to other folks any more'n I have. I'm the librarian, and I know the bylaws. This is my library. The young man looked profoundly surprised. Why, I know it is. I'm so sorry, if you mind my coming. I suppose you came to see what more you could say to set her against me? But you need trouble. It's my library today, but it won't be this time tomorrow. I'm on the way now, to take her back the key and the register. Young Arnie's face grew grave, but without betraying the consciousness of guilt as he had looked for. I don't understand, he said. Here must be some mistake. Why should I say things against you to Miss Hatchard or to anyone? The apparent evasiveness of the reply caused Charity's indignation to overflow. Don't know why you should. I could understand Norma Fry's doing it, because she's always wanted to get me out of here ever since the first day. I can't see why, when she's got her own home, and her father to work for her. Nor I the target, neither, when she got a legacy from her stepbrother on last year. But anyway we all live in the same place, and when it's a place like North Dormer it's enough to make people hate each other, just to have to walk down the same street every day. But you don't live here, and you don't know anything about any of us, so what did you have to meddle for? Do you suppose the other girls would have kept the books any better than I did? Why, Orma Fry don't hardly know a book from a flat iron. And what if I don't always sit around here doing nothing till it strikes 5 up at the church? Who cares if the library's open or shut? Do you suppose anybody ever comes here for books? What they'd like to come for is to meet the fellows they're going with, if I'd let 'em. But I wouldn't let Bill Salas from over the hill hang round here waiting for the youngest target girl, because I know him. That's all, even if I don't know about books all I ought to. She stopped with a choking in her throat. Tremors of rage were running through her, and she steadied herself against the edge of the desk lest he should see her weakness. What he saw seemed to affect him deeply, for he grew red under his sunburn, and stammered out. Miss Royal, I assure you. I assure you. His distress inflamed her anger, and she regained her voice to fling back. If I was you I'd have the nerve to stick to what I said. The taunt seemed to restore his presence of mind. Hope I should if I knew, but I don't. Apparently something disagreeable has happened, for which you think I'm to blame. But I don't know what it is, because I've been up on Eagle Ridge ever since the early morning. I don't know where you've been this morning, but I know you were here in this library yesterday, and it was you that went home, and told your cousin the books were in bad shape, and brought around to see how I'd neglected them. Young Arnie looked sincerely concerned. Is that what you were told? I don't wonder you're angry. The books are in bad shape, and as some are interesting it's a pity. I told Miss Hatchard they were suffering from dampness and lack of air. And I brought her here to show her how easily the place could be ventilated. I also told her you ought to have someone to help you do the dusting and airing. If you were given a wrong version of what I said, I'm sorry, but I'm so fond of old books that I'd rather see them made into a bonfire than left to molder away like these. Charity felt her sobs rising and tried to stifle them in words. Don't care what you say you told her. All I know is she thinks it's all my fault, and I'm going to lose my job, and I wanted it more than anyone in the village, because I haven't got anybody belonging to me the way other folks have. All I wanted was to put aside money enough to get away from here sometime. Do you suppose if it hadn't been for that I'd have kept on sitting day after day in this old vault? Of this appeal her ear took up only the last question. T is an old vault, but need it be? That's the point. And it's my putting the question to my cousin that seems to have been the cause of the trouble. His glance explored the melancholy penumbra of the long narrow room, resting on the blotched walls, the discolored rows of books, and the stern rosewood desk surmounted by the portrait of the young Honorius. Of course it's a bad job to do anything with a building jammed against a hill like this ridiculous mausoleum. You couldn't get a good draft through it without blowing a hole in the mountain. But it can be ventilated after a fashion, and the sun can be let in. I'll show you how if you like. The architect's passion for improvement had already made him lose sight of her grievance, and he lifted his stick instructively toward the cornice. But her silence seemed to tell him that she took no interest in the ventilation of the library, and turning back to her abruptly he held out both hands. Look here, you don't mean what you said? You don't really think I'd do anything to hurt you? A new note in his voice disarmed her. No one had ever spoken to her in that tone. Oh, what did you do it for then? She wailed. He had her hands in his, and she was feeling the smooth touch that as he had imagined the day before on the hillside. He pressed her hands lightly and let them go. Hi, to make things pleasanter for you here. And better for the books. I'm sorry if my cousin twisted around what I said. She's excitable, and she lives on trifles. I ought to have remembered that. Don't punish me by letting her think you take her seriously. It was wonderful to hear him speak of Miss Hatchard as if she were a querulous baby. In spite of his shyness, he had the air of power that the experience of cities probably gave. It was the fact of having lived in Nettleton that made Lawyer Royal, in spite of his infirmities, the strongest man in North Dormer, and Charity was sure that this young man had lived in bigger places than Nettleton. She felt that, if she kept up her denunciatory tone, he would secretly class her with Miss Hatchard, and the thought made her suddenly simple. It don't matter to Miss Hatchard how I take her. Mr. Royal says she's going to get a trained librarian, and I'd sooner resign than have the village say she sent me away. Naturally you would. But I'm sure she doesn't mean to send you away. At any rate, won't you give me the chance to find out first and let you know? It will be time enough to resign if I'm mistaken. Her pride flamed into her cheeks at the suggestion of his intervening. Don't want anybody should coax her to keep me if I don't suit. He colored too. Give you my word I won't do that. Only wait till tomorrow, will you? He looked straight. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.